Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th Canto, Chapter 7, What Prahlad Learned in the Womb, Text 15. Rishikarunikastasya Pradat Ubhayamishvara Dharmasyat Tatyam Gyanam Cha Mam Abhyudhisya Nirmalam Rishikarunikastasya Pradat Ubhayamishvara Dharmasyat Tatyam Gyanam Cha Amama Pyudhisya Nirmalam Rishikarunikastasya Pradat Ubhayamishvara Dharmasya Tattam Gyanam Cha Amama Pyudhisya Nirmalam Vaishnavis. Rishi, the great sage Narada Muni, Karunika, naturally very affectionate or merciful to the fallen souls. Tasya, to her. Pradat, gave instructions. Ubhayam, both. Ishvara, a powerful controller. Who can do whatever he likes. Narada Muni. Dharmasya. Of religion. Tattam. The truth. Gyanam. Knowledge. Cha. And. Mam. Me. Api. Especially. Uddishya. Indicating. Nirmalam. Without material contamination. Translation. Narada Muni delivered his instructions both to me, who was within the womb, and to my mother, who was engaged in rendering him service. Because he is naturally extremely kind to the fallen souls, being in a transcendental position, he gave instructions on religion and transcendental knowledge. These instructions were free from all material contamination. Purport. Here it is said, Dharmasya tattvam gyanam cha nirmalam. The word nirmalam refers to spotless dharma, spotless religion, or, in other words, Bhagavat dharma. Ordinary ritualistic activities constitute contaminated religion, by which one benefits by developing material wealth and prosperity. But uncontaminated, pure religion consists of understanding one's relationship with God and acting accordingly, thus fulfilling the highest mission of life and returning home back to Godhead. Prahlad Maharaj advised that one elevate oneself to the standard of Bhagavat Dharma from the very beginning of life. Kumara Acharat Pragyo Dharman Bhagavatanyaha. The Lord himself also speaks of pure uncontaminated religion when he says, Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. One must understand one's relationship with God and then act accordingly. This is Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma means Bhakti Yoga. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayat Ahaitukam. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. To be situated on the platform of pure religion, one should perform bhakti yoga in relationship with Krishna, Vasudev. Om agena tirmadandasya, gyananjana shalakaya, chakshun militam yena, tasmai Sri Gurave namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. How is it that Narada Muni is in this situation of giving instructions, as Prahlad relays, both to Prahlad within the womb and to the mother who was rendering Narada Muni's service at his ashram? As you remember, the situation began with Indra and the demigods capturing Hiranyakashipu's wife. And they had come to a logical, empirical conclusion. They had used the best of material scientific analysis to size up the situation and decide what must be done. Here is the wife of Hiranyakashipu who has terrorized the whole universe. And she's pregnant. Now, if the father was that bad, what's the son going to be like? So the demigods decided to take an action which would ordinarily be considered quite drastic. They were going to, and they did, imprison Kayadu, the wife of Hiranyakashipu, and wait until the child was born, and then finish off the child. Now, we often point out, you have to give the demigods credit. First of all, as compared to contemporary standards, at least they were going to wait for the child to be born. And secondly, you have to take into account the extraordinary havoc that Hiranyakashipu had caused, not simply to one planet, but he had disturbed the whole universe. So you're not talking about any small-time Hitler or Saddam Hussein or whatever unnamed American demons there are. You're talking about someone who has caused excruciating pain, offended all saintly persons, troubled the demigods even. He took over the functions of nature. And so naturally, the demigods were being proactive. They knew we're dealing with a dynasty of demons. And certainly, this son of Hiranyakashipu was going to be a chip off the old block. He could probably be worse. So, why not do the world a favor? We're dealing with, the demigods thought, we're dealing with a lineage of demons. Things have gotten so bad, we have to adopt drastic means. So they imprisoned Kayadu. Then, the Shastra says, Srimad Bhagavatam says, Yudhishthira. By chance, apparently, Narada Muni appears. This word is often used in Bhagavatam. Yudhishthira. Even in the second canto, in the questions and answers between Prichit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami. Yudhishthira hetunava. How does the pure soul acquire a material body? It seems apparently by chance this has happened. Now, Yudhishthira, by chance, in Bhagavatam, doesn't mean the contemporary demoniac atheistic version, in which there is just no purpose to anything in this world. Everything is just random interaction of particles of matter, however you want to define those particles. No, Yudhishthira means that externally it seems like for no reason at all, but underneath there's always a reason. Just like we know that certainly there is a reason why the spirit soul acquires a material body. But when you look at it from the external point of view, it seems to be just some kind of, indeed, chance happening. Similarly with the wanderings of Narada Muni. You remember how when Nalakuva and Monigriva were sporting with young girls quite inappropriately in the river. Again, Yudhishthira Narada Muni happens to come by at that moment, and the girls immediately scrambled to cover up. But Nalakuva and Monigriva were so intoxicated. They had attained the pinnacle of current civilization. They were totally wasted, and they were sporting in a river, unclothed with unclothed young ladies. In the modern contemporary mind, life doesn't get any better than that. But when the girls saw Narada Muni coming, they knew this is a problem. They didn't want to get cursed. They knew they were wrong. But Nalakuva and Manigriva, they were so wasted, so intoxicated, they just couldn't care less. They're feeling all right. That's the main goal, to feel all right, to indulge the senses. So, as you know, Narada Muni gave them a combination of blessing, curse. So, again, it seems by chance, Narada Muni is just wandering here and there. And by chance, he came upon this scene, Yudhishthira, he came upon this scene of the demigods capturing Kayadu and imprisoning her. So, this, by chance, as we said, is only skin deep, so to speak. Superficially, it seems random. But underneath, there's a purpose. Indeed, throughout the whole material universe, Krishna has strewn opportunities for conditioned souls to contact his devotee. That's actually the hidden purpose of the universe. So externally, from a superficial point of view, things look by chance. But underneath, there is the divine purpose of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to give conditioned souls a chance to reconnect with him. And therefore, throughout the universe, there are strewn opportunities for people to contact devotees. Perhaps you can compare it to like a country where there's so many landmines buried. Like in Vietnam, even to this day, there are so many unexploded bombs left over in the ground from the Vietnam War, who knows, 40 years ago or something. So unknowingly, you can set off a bomb and havoc is caused. So similarly, there are devotees and the possibility of contacting devotees strewn throughout the universe, and even unknowingly, you can trip across one of these activation points, and your spiritual life begins or makes further progress. So that is the real purpose of the material universe, reformation of the conditioned souls. And apparently, encounters happen by chance. But you see, even if you want to say there was no reason, it was causeless mercy, underneath it all is that purposeful purpose of the cosmos that Krishna wants you to contact devotees. It may take you many, many births. Krishna admits that in Bhagavad Gita. Even for a wise person, a jnani, who understands knowledge of matter and spirit. Bahunam jamanamante jnanamam prabhajate. After many births and deaths, the wise person, the metaphysical scholar, understands Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sadurbhava. It may take many births until, by chance, Yudhishthira, one happens to contact Narada Muni or his representative. But still, underneath it all, it's not by chance. This is what Krishna wants. And that's why, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Natchasasmam anusheshu kashchan me prithukritama. There's no one more dear, nor will there ever be one more dear than the one who assists Krishna in providing these contact points with devotees so that they can learn the science of bhakti. So Narada Muni, in spite of the demigods' astute analysis, Narada Muni just disregards their sense perception. And according to modern times, this is a great offense. This is superstition. This is fanaticism. The situation is obvious. According to logic, according to reason, according to sense perception, Hiranyakashipu, his wife, pregnant with Hiranyakashipu's child, more trouble coming to the world, got to do something. We don't want to suffer anymore. But Narada Muni tells them something that goes completely against what they are, what they have reason, and what they are perceiving. He says, no, this child in the womb is very special. So special that even if you tried, you couldn't kill the child. Narada Muni does establish the point that, first of all, this woman is sinless. She's the wife of another, and she's chaste. So he does establish the good qualities of Kayadu, even though she's the wife of Hiranyakashipu. Just see how fine-tuned is the analysis of Narada Muni. She's not at fault. Furthermore, the child in the womb is a Mahabhagavat, a great devotee of the Lord. In other words, take my word for it. Hear the sound vibration of Parampara. Now, according to current standards, this is very dogmatic. And it's this kind of process has gotten the world into so much trouble by causing religious strife and religious wars, as if there were never any other kind of wars. People will say, this kind of stuff ended in the Middle Ages when enlightenment came. Enlightenment meaning that any authoritative shastra, even the Yavana Shastras, that was tossed out. And instead, you rely on the experimental process. All backwardness is due to simply accepting knowledge based on spiritual authority, because some spiritual authority says you accept. That impeded human advancement and prevented technology from progressing. But as soon as that was tossed out a few hundred years ago, then the mighty technological age began, in which truth is determined by the experimental process, as best as truth can be ascertained. And there's nothing beneficial for the human being except that which comes through the experimental process. So today, Narada Muni would be accused in so many ways of being. I've seen some of the accusations hurled at scholars who, like our Jhutakarma Prabhu, because nowadays, even atheistic scholars are protesting that there's obvious holes in the evolutionary theory. There's so much that scientists don't know. There's so much that they're speculating. Even atheistic scholars are saying that. They clearly say, we don't believe in God. There's nothing beyond matter, but still your theories are just lousy. So obviously this upsets many people because it's like you're betraying our camp. You're supposed to be agreeing with us. You're an atheist? Oh, great. But how can you criticize these sacred religious principles of atheism in terms of evolutionary theory and other speculations? And such persons are accused of siding with religious fanatics. They really have some hot terms for these persons, these atheists who are daring to criticize evolution and other scientific speculations. You're a religious fanatic. You're a intelligent design acolyte. An acolyte, in case you weren't Catholic, an acolyte is an assistant to a priest. So you're an intelligent design acolyte, and you're an evolution denier. You're supposed to tremble now. Those three things. So, what is it that is so intimidating about parampara? For the age of Kali person to shut down reliance on your sense perception and focus on hearing. This is considered so unconventional and so radical and indeed backwards. How can you just listen to what a person says and accept that that is the reality? How can you do that? You know how people are. You know the mistakes they make. How can you dare situate yourself in that way? This is the Middle Ages. Even worse, it's the Dark Ages. Just because a priest says, you will accept. Now just consider. All right. We toss out any notion of parampara. And what is left for us? We just rely on our imperfect senses. Now, isn't that a disaster? Just think how much despair, how much depression you'll undergo, knowing that you'll never get beyond the tiny, limited confines of your mind and senses. It's very depressing. There are persons who realize that. And they're very disturbed by it. As best as material knowledge gets, as far as our senses can perceive, whether technologically aided or not, we're never going to solve certain questions. Why is there a universe? What was before the universe? Even what is consciousness and why we are conscious? These things we'll never be able to figure out. So for someone with a little bit of good fortune, that's depressing. I'm simply going to be relying on my limited senses. That's all I have to look forward to. This is what happens when you deny parampara. What are you left with? You have to look at what you're left with. You're just left with the reliance on your senses and the senses of others. And you know how others are. You know how yourself, you know how you are. You're just going to rely on my senses and the senses of others? I remember my freshman year at university, I was expert at finding courses in which you could grade yourself. That was considered very progressive. So I had a lot of friends because they knew I could find those courses and the thousands of courses at university, you know. Find those liberal professors who, let you grade yourself. So there was one philosophy class, and all my friends were in the class because, this professor, he's a real idealistic professor. And so all the cool guys on campus, we knew, that's our man. Bright-eyed, relative to Kali Yuga, very idealistic, soft-hearted, believed in real philosophic wisdom. Myself and my friends are just snickering. Now, students, let us discuss what is virtue. So we would, we would attend class, knowing that at the end we're going to grade ourselves. So at the end, he gave, it was a final exam. In 2 hours, you had to sit and write according to a question that he prepared. And he was really sincerely interested in philosophy and values and so on and so forth. The Greeks, especially, he's into the Greek philosophers. So he gave us one question for the final exam. What is virtue? The room was quiet. You're supposed to write for 2 hours. What is virtue? That was your final exam. And then, as part of the exam, you're supposed to grade yourself. That was a good part. So my friends and I just looked at each other. What is virtue? This is going to be a good one. We knew, as denizens of Kali Yuga, we know there's no virtue. Do your thing, whatever it is. That's the virtue. So we just gave each other that look like, we're going to teach this, ivory tower, Ivy League guy a few things. So I remember I wrote my paper. I said, what is the use of this question? This question, what is virtue, is asked by a capitalistic, imperialistic, bourgeois snob who's got nothing better to do to think about these things while people are suffering. All right, Torrance. You're sitting in your comfortable leather chair at this comfortable university, which I was also at, of course, but asking questions like, what is virtue? Meanwhile, the whole world is being controlled, manipulated, terrorized, imperialized, colonized. So then I said, virtue? How can one even talk about that in such a situation? Because back then, every student was a radical. If you weren't a radical, then something was wrong with you. So I concluded my paper saying, virtue is whatever you think it is. Don't you know that? Now get on with your life. And furthermore, as far as my grade, I deserve the top grade, honors. Because I have understood that it's all speculation. Virtue is whatever you make it. So give me an honors. He didn't quite agree, even though he said we could grade ourselves. I guess he got so upset reading my exam, he just gave me a pass. He didn't fail me. He just gave me a pass. Where's the virtue? He promised that he would give whatever grade we asked. Anyway, so looking back, I can see, at least in the darkness of illusion for Prabhupada, rescued us, at least I understood that you're just speculating. Why are you wasting my time? Someone says this is virtue, someone says that is virtue. So at least I had some glimmer of understanding that this is all human beings are left with, speculation according to their limited capacity. So that's what happens when you push aside parampara. Okay, you say there's a risk in hearing knowledge from parampara. There's a risk in just accepting sound vibration. But what about the risk of just relying on sense perception and logic and reason? What about that? Okay, then, choose your poison. Which one do you want? Now, of course, Bhagavatam is presenting such extraordinary personalities. In other words, they are not ordinary personalities that are staffing the parampara. And furthermore, that knowledge relayed through the parampara by sound vibration has transforming effects. So this is another point that I was meditating on back in my primitive student days. Where is the transformation in human society by all this knowledge they're studying? We used to argue with the radicals would argue with the professors in that way. Okay, suppose we learn all this. What's it doing for the world? What's this course doing to help people? And the professors, they were just, young people today, they're very strange. But Bhagavatam knowledge transforms. Remember, there was one devotee. Actually, I think our departed godbrother, Sahotra Prabhu, he relays how he was so interested in Vimanas, lost Vedic science about flying spacecraft and all sorts of mystic powers, and that was his interest before becoming a devotee. So he decided he was going to ask Prabhupada about that. So he phrased the question to Prabhupada. Prabhupada, can you tell us something about Vedic technology? So then Sahotra Prabhu sat back ready to hear all about Vimanas, aircraft, and mystic powers, and all kinds of exotic things like that. What did Prabhupada reply? He just looked at him and said, Vedic technology means parampara. Finished. So think about that. It sounds like a very simple answer, doesn't it? What do you mean Vedic technology is parampara? What's so technological about parampara? Parampara is a belief. You know, we believe that, you know, there was this person, he spoke to that person, and he spoke to that person, and now it's down, you know, the mango comes down to us. Isn't that kind of a religious belief, a religious doctrine? How can it be technology? So it requires some time and thought to understand what Prabhupada is saying. That indeed, the parampara is a technological scientific device for understanding and seeing beyond what your senses can perceive. And of course, beyond the mistakes that your senses are making. So this active nature of the parampara is very important for us to understand. Otherwise, we're just going to think we're a bunch of religious true believers. Or as the atheistic scientists say, we're just religious fanatics, evolution deniers, intelligent design acolytes. We might start feeling a little, you know, guilty. Maybe it's true, you know. Just because Bhaktivinoda told Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktisiddhanta told Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada, and then, you know, then there's my present Gurudev, and we're supposed to just accept that? So often then, when devotees, unfortunately, when they try to widen their material educational experience, I'm not criticizing university knowledge, by the way. Often it happens that they get really blown off track because, I've been told by those who are doing this, that the worst thing you can do is study religious studies. Because unless you're very strong, you get to see how everything is relative. You're taught that religion is a psychological phenomenon, and whether it's this belief or that belief, it's simply the human capacity to conjure up these beliefs, which are good for society, because such religious beliefs, they produce nice art, nice music, nice culture. Even some atheists these days are saying, we've got to stop bagging religion so much. It's all fantasy, we know that, but it does good things for society. It makes people hug one another. It makes them sing nice songs. So these extreme atheists who are just totally obliterating religion, no need to mention their names, the famous ones, but they're just over the top. They should lighten up, become more soft, and understand that religious fantasies do have humanizing values, which we should all respect. So parampara actually allows us experience. This is why Krishna in Bhagavad Gita talks about Transcendental knowledge burns like a fire. There's nothing theoretical about when a fire burns you. Yet Krishna describes transcendental knowledge in that way. He also describes transcendental knowledge as a boat that can carry you from point A to point B. So there's nothing theoretical about that. We need to meditate on the full impact of this knowledge that we're dealing with. Narada Muni, Prahlad says, gave me affection. It's described here that he spoke, because he's Karunika, naturally very affectionate or merciful. What's the result of that affectionate mercy? Did he just kind of give the warm fuzzies to Prahlad? Did he kind of just pamper Prahlad? Prahlad, I want to be your guru, so I want to make you feel psychologically good, you know. Give you some positivism. I want you to feel good about yourself, you know. No. The affection described here is pure knowledge. These instructions were free from all material contamination, nirmala. He gave instructions on religion and transcendental knowledge. So in the purport, Srila Prabhupada makes sure that we understand that this is not ordinary knowledge, not ordinary religion. This is uncontaminated because it's all about giving pleasure to the Supreme Personality of Godhead with no expectation of material benefit. No expectation of material benefit means not even desiring freedom from material existence. That's how pure this knowledge is. And because of that purity, therefore the knowledge can transform. And because Narada Muni is giving that kind of pure religion, that's the greatest affection. He's doing the greatest thing for the living entities, for the world, for the universe, by his relaying through parampara knowledge free from any kind of material contamination, even the desire, free from even the desire for liberation. So in the purport, Prabhupada quotes the verse from Bhagavatam, first canto, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. Janayat Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayura Hoitukam. By rendering devotional service unto the Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So that Jnana and Vairagya, we clearly understand what Vairagya is. Detachment from material attachment. But what about the Jnana? Generally, we think that Jnana means metaphysical knowledge, understanding what is matter, what is spirit. But no, the Jnana in that verse from the first canto of Bhagavatam, that word goes much deeper. It's referring to personal knowledge of Krishna, Krishna's form, his qualities, his sweetness. That is all contained in jnana when used in reference to the knowledge that Narada Muni is relaying. We're not dry negativists. We want to approach the supreme positive. That can only be done through the right process. And the right process depends on hearing from the right person. We can speak more about that in the coming days, because it's a very controversial point. What's the big deal in hearing from the right person? Hearing is hearing. Why does it depend on who gave you the knowledge? So we'll discuss that in the coming days. But for now, let's focus on the technological device of the parampara. Krishna refers to it in Bhagavad Gita. Evam parampara praptam. I spoke this knowledge of Gita in parampara. I spoke it to the sun god. The sun god passed it down. Even sakalena mahata yoga nashta parantapa. Due to the effects of time, the knowledge became distorted, became lost. I spoke it again. So Krishna is showing you, he's personally involved with the parampara, keeping it alive. Krishna is aware of the problems of the transfer of knowledge in the material world. but he backs the process up himself. That is the point Bhagavad Gita is making. Krishna has a personal stake, to use contemporary lingo. He's a stakeholder in the parampara process. He wants to make sure the process works. So indeed, because it's the material world, there are problems. Krishna doesn't cover that up. No cover-ups in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, yeah, it happens. The meaning of Bhagavad Gita becomes lost. You know, that's the nature of the material world that you all wanted to take birth in. What do you want out of me? You all wanted the material world. It's got problems. Nevertheless, in spite of those problems, of the original and clear purport of Bhagavad Gita becoming lost, I come and do something about it. I revive the parampara so that it works, so that this technological process of transmitting knowledge works. Krishna backs the whole process up. But once we understand that our parampara system is not simply like a collection of saints that we adore and we believe in, once you understand its transformative power, its potency for transmitting knowledge, then we begin to see how extraordinary is this bhakti process. Because it depends on persons. We're not ashamed of that. Okay, as we said, you want to reject the persons, saying persons always make mistakes. How can you say that you believe in these persons and because they said something? You can imagine Indra telling Narada Muni, well, look, that's what you say. You say that the child in the womb is a great soul. We don't go for that. Look, you know, we're not fanatics, you know. Use your intelligence, Narada. Come on. No fanatic Hare Krishna stuff out of you. Of course, you know, Jai Gurudev, but let's be reasonable here. It's obvious, you know, what's going on. It's obvious to our intelligence. We're mature persons. We're demigods. It's obvious what's going on. No. The Shastra says immediately Indra backed off. And he and the demigods even circumambulated Kayadu with Prahlad in the womb. And then they left. So that is the symptom of the most intelligent person. Otherwise, if you reject parampara, what are you left with? You say, well, there's risks in parampara. Even if you say that, what about the risks in just relying on knowledge that you get through your senses? How bleak life is. You'll never be able to figure anything out. And that's what people are realizing today. They can't handle their problems on an individual level, on a societal level, on an institutional level, on a global level. They can't solve anything. So now you can point out, this is because you have no other option for knowledge than your imperfect mind and senses. You are a religious fanatic. You believe so much in your mind and senses. We take the technological device of the parampara, and just like, for example, one last point, in 77, in Mumbai, Prabhupada explained about his Guru Puja. He said, this is not just some kind of religious ritual. This Guru Puja is Divya Gyan Hriday Prakashito. It is actually the transmission of Divya Gyan, divine knowledge. So there's so many things going on in our bhakti process that have significance far beyond what ordinary intelligence can perceive. Even chanting and dancing before Prabhupada's Vyasasan, chanting Sri Guru Charana Padma, you're getting knowledge. Knowledge is appearing in your heart. It may take some time to realize that. But when you do realize that, how truly happy and thankful you are. We don't have much time for questions, but maybe we have a comment from our senior Vaishnavas, Palananda Swami.
It seems that they want the parampara to start with themselves rather than Krishna. Because they're saying something, they want everyone else to accept it and then continue on from there. But they don't want to accept what Krishna said.
But what they say is open to be refined and adjusted by the experimental process. Amarendra Prabhu.
I compliment you on the expertise with which you finessed the first part of your presentation, but aren't we really talking about an abortion here? And if we are, isn't there some precedent in our philosophy or our tradition for abortions under certain circumstances? And therefore, why, when 99.9% of the population is what we would refer to as unwanted progeny in the Kali Yuga, why are we so hung up about abortions? Why should we really make a big deal out of this when the same criteria that were going to be used by the demigods and the sages to abort Prahlad Maharaj, except for the intervention of Narada Muni because it was Prahlad Maharaj as opposed to others, why do we make such a big deal out of abortion?
Well, first of all, the important point is that the demigods were going to wait for the child to be born. Now, okay, you may say, whether born or in the womb, what's the difference? But they saw it as a big difference. And secondly, they're demigods. And these are extraordinary circumstances. Sometimes demigods do, you know, extraordinary things. That's why Indra's got those thousands of eyes on his body, you know? We won't go into it. So, but we are ordinary residents of Kali Yuga. And we cannot act the way the demigods act. And just like in the previous purport, Prabhupada pointed out, hey, what's young man Narada Muni doing alone with the young wife, Arunigarzibu? Yeah. And Prabhupada warns us, Narada Muni can't be brought down on the material platform, but for the rest of you ordinary folks, watch out. So there's a distinction. Demigod life is full of all sorts of intricacies and very esoteric activities. But we're ordinary human beings, and we have to follow the Dharma strictly. Our capacity is very limited. Our intelligence is very slight. That's as best as I can answer your legal challenge. Give him some court cases. Tie him up. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada Ki Jai.